The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Dublin City Council CEO Richard Shakespeare joins me in studio now, just as the council confirms it has completed the €581 million purchase of the former DIT site on Kevin Street in Dublin. The landmark deal will see a new 14-storey civic headquarters for thousands of staff and hundreds of apartments developed by the end of this decade. But the move would also see the council vacate its long-standing base at Wood Quay, and while it's being framed as a cost-effective alternative to a near £500 million retrofit of existing offices, it comes against a backdrop of serious questions around spending, governance and delivery, from stalled developments and problematic new bills to admissions that some past acquisitions should never have been purchased. Richard Shakespeare, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me in.
Now, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the bunkers at Wood Quay and the history of them and how they were hard fought against by various people, including Father Martin, who fought long and hard and ended up being awarded for his trouble even as the bunkers were built.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not here to apologise for the sins of the past, but in my previous life, I would have sort of seen it as, an act of cultural vandalism, the largest Viking settlement outside of Scandinavia. But I suppose I am where I am. And, you know, just to frame it, you know, I didn't acquire the site for £581 million. The site was acquired for £90 million plus VAT and fees, which is about £104 million. And I, you know, as a public servant, people like us to be creative, like us to be brave, and like us to be ambitious. And you know, two of the big challenges, but the major challenge I have at the moment is housing. The other one was, you know, the opportunity to spend quite a considerable amount of money retrofitting the civic offices.
Okay, now let's talk about it. It would have cost, the estimate, maybe £500 million. And I heard, by the way, when I was in RT a couple of weeks ago for the Late Late Show, they told me that the studio building, the cost of refurbing that would be £400 million. And therefore, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to farm out the Late Late Show and other programs to private providers.
Yeah.
And those are solutions. But the whole thing is that you're always encouraging the rest of us to retrofit, to try and insulate our houses, to put solar panels on our roofs, to put heat pumps in. And you guys are just jumping ship.
You could say that. I think what it is that as the accounting officer for the City Council, I've many things to look at. Okay, so environmental considerations are one, cost is another, regeneration is another, and housing is another. So an opportunity presented itself about October of last year, where the Arup report that we had commissioned was crystallising, and the costs were coming in, you know, at that £487 million if it was a single move. And that includes about, you might say, £152 million of renting offices for 10 years, because that's the length of time it will take.
Are you saying that in order to refurb, you'd all have to get out?
Yes.
And Arup
There were two options. There was one in terms of we could have played Tetris with the staff and done it in bits and pieces, or we could go in one fell swoop. Now, we're also responsible for delivering services. So from that perspective, you know, trying to get a coherency in the services that we deliver, you know, a single move would be preferable. Do I want to, you might say, move twice, move out, move back, move out, move back? No, I don't think it's a productive use.
Okay, so you move out, you decide that it is not sustainable to actually do the refurb. You do a new build, which is probably energy efficient and so on, up in Kevin Street, and incorporated in all of that is accommodation.
There's 299 one- and two-bed units. I mean, I suppose the beauty of this particular site is that it's been completely de-risked from a planning perspective, from an engineering perspective, because it's above ground. And so there's probably been about £100 odd million spent in de-risking it, taking that on top of the £150 million between acquisition and planning costs. We're getting a fairly good deal, to be honest with you.
Okay, so the idea is that you will have a certain amount of housing there. Will that be privately bought? Will that be private housing?
No.
Is that how you're part financing it, or are these authority tenants?
It will probably be going down the line of the cost rental. And I know there's been commentary around cost rental recently. We have a model that we believe will work. And so that would be the intention, that they would be publicly owned homes, and we will go the cost rental model on it, which is, as you know, 25% okay. Below market.
What has happened to the bunkers at Wood Quay? I mean, the front building, the one along the river, is more modern than the original bunkers, and it was allegedly built in a very sustainable way at the time.
At the time. I think that's, you know, standards change.
So is that going to be knocked down?
Not necessarily. So what we are doing over the next couple of months is we'll be engaging with the elected members to get a direction of travel. We'll interrogate what they might want us to do. All we've done to date has been a massing study, and it was kind of a very conservative massing study to see if you were putting housing on it, what could you fit? And that was 532 plus a large community facility. So that might not necessarily be what the elected members want us to do. And I've had all sorts of suggestions in terms of we could actually celebrate the Viking heritage of the site on site. I mean,
but isn't much of that destroyed?
You know, an awful lot of it was taken away by the National Museum.
Well, they had no choice, had they? Because the vandalism was actually being perpetrated by the city council of the time.
I wouldn't call it, well, I called it cultural vandalism. I'm sure there's plenty of material that could be celebrated and shown and that. But that's, I mean, we are, as with any of these things, we will engage with the elected members to find out what direction of travel they would like to take on it.
Now, the massed concrete bunkers, and they are massed concrete, that's the way the build was at the time.
Yeah.
Sam Stevenson, not the Scott Allen Walker
part,
which is more glassy.
Yeah.
The bunkers, what's to happen to those? Because all the embedded carbon in that concrete, what is to happen to it?
So the embodied carbon it all depends what you remember. That the embodied carbon is carbon that's been spent, okay, in the manufacture of the concrete. Nothing is released if you knock them down, okay? It's the carbon that you would create going up. So the only carbon, if you were talking about there, is that the cost of transporting it off-site. Well, that's to be determined. Nobody has said we're going to clear fell anything. That is part and parcel of it.
Surely before you go off shopping for another site and you bought the one in Kevin Street, which was admittedly a bargain basement price compared to what the previous people had bought it for.
Yeah.
So you got a bargain there. But surely the whole thing should have been comprehensively planned. In other words, knowing what was going in before you leave.
Well, I mean, it is, you might say, capable of being retrofitted for residential.
Let me get this straight. These concrete bunkers with very limited glazing on them, you'd put people into them.
Oh, you could do. I'm not saying you would, Pat. I'm saying you could. Okay? That's literally... and you can... you might say, there was no point in reality... Okay, we were under time pressure. So there was no point in expending an awful lot of energy in overly interrogating what you might or might not do.
So,
in relation
to, really saying at the moment the plan is half baked?
No, what I'm saying to you is,
well, it's not baked.
It's not fully baked. But I mean, that's the joy of living in a democracy, Pat. And I'm accountable to 63 elected members. And ultimately speaking, anything, doesn't matter whether it's a playground, Pat, or office buildings or residential, it goes through a planning process with the elected members.
Now, I'm not going to waste time on the 10 million that has been allocated for kind of maintenance between now and when you might finally leave the building, because you say it's money that might not be spent.
Correct.
So I'm going to park that.
Yep.
And you will be taken to task, I suppose, if it is spent. You know, saying, what are you doing, wasting all this money on building that you're now going to...
It's really there in terms of a lot of the health and safety issues that you would need, you would have to address as an employer.
If a lift is banjaxed, you have to fix the lift. I understand all of that. So you're asking us to hold our fire and judge you on the result?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's, you know what I mean? I can give you no more than that, Pat, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm just concerned that I don't really have a full sense of the master plan, but, because I don't know what's going to happen on Woodkey.
But if you want to come in and look at all the figures, Pat, feel free and I'll facilitate you.
Okay, now I want to mention something that came out last week, and that is the key findings, the socioeconomic analysis of Dublin's southwest inner city, which of course is, they're your neighbours, effectively, because you... At the moment, Woodkey is in the heart of all of that. And looking at the stats, 4 in 10 of the children living in this area, only 4 in 10 go to secondary school. That's appalling. Third level progress for kids, very, very bad. Huge numbers of children live in one-parent families. The amount of deaths from drug poisoning is highest in this area compared to any other place. I mean, it's an area of utter neglect. And yet, if you like, they're your neighbours. Always have been.
Well, I think... You know, you can characterise things as the city councillors are responsible for everything and are the panacea as well. An awful lot of the findings now, and I haven't read it, Pat, okay? We'd have little or no control. I mean, like, as the chief executive of the city council, you know, what I don't have control of is probably more than what I do have control of. And I know I remember a couple of years ago you wanted me on air to talk about Marrowbone Lane.
Indeed, the playing field.
Yeah, and we listened. Okay, now it's a complicated little exercise.
And it's slow.
It is, because what I have is, that is the main operations depot for the South City. So I've to find somewhere else for a salt barn so I can grit the roads. I've to find somewhere else for the waste management services. I also have a rather large Irish water depot that I need to remove. So these things take time, but... We did put in to the budget, the capital budget, the 26 to 28 budget, €1 million for developing the proposals for Marrowbone Lane. And we'll be going to planning then, about a 10-minute walk away up in Donore Avenue, the old St. Teresa's Garden, with a full-size synthetic pitch. And don't forget...
And how long is that going to take? Because that is going to be a building site for a long time, isn't it?
It is, but there's nothing to say that you can't build the pitch... you know, once you get beyond a particular point, but those pitches you can turn around in probably 9 months.
Would being involved in public-private partnerships accelerate that process? Because we see there is one behind St. James's School, there is a pitch being developed in a partnership with a private company, and that seems to be going well.
It can be, you know what I mean? That, and we have, and we are exploring, particularly with some of the religious orders, in trying to, you might say, make private space publicly accessible, you know, the school pitches and things like that, because they tend to be open Monday to Friday for the school community, and then they'd lie idle. And what we have done, or in my previous life, we have built pitches in secondary schools, and local clubs and communities have access after 6 and at weekends.
Now, one of the other areas of your responsibility is housing, and we know that part of the Kevin Street development and perhaps the Woodkey development will include the building of housing. And many people hark back to the 1930s when the corporation, as it was then, built loads of houses, and where in the inner suburbs that were being built in Phibsborough and Crumlin, Drimna and so on, that... You know, the state itself, through its local authorities, was a massive builder of local authority housing for people who could not afford to buy their own.
Yeah, yeah.
That process seems largely to have stalled, and we all wonder why.
Well, I mean, it's one of those great things that we ponder, is that, you know, as a city council, you know, back in pre-crash, and it's tragic that I'm talking that far back, that... We lost an awful lot of, you might say, the knowledge and all of that, and also the funding.
But wasn't it the case that even, you know, pre-crash, when the Celtic Tiger was booming, that it was more convenient for local authorities, whatever housing they were built, just get one of the developers in and get them to do it? So the expertise was being run down anyway.
It was, but it had run down to quite an unsustainable level. And, you know, in fairness now to Mick Mulhern, who's the Assistant Chief in Housing, we knew we needed to do something different. We've restructured the department in terms of our delivery and building on our own sites, partnering with the AHBs and the LDA.
So how many houses do you think you'll build? And I won't ask you this year, because housing takes 2-3 years of a cycle to get planning and to build and then commission and so on. So how many houses will you build over the next 3 years?
Ourselves is probably about 4,000 to 5,000. Across out to 2032, about 15,500. But that's not just us, but that's largely on our land.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at, you may have seen this, in Newmarket, there's an apartment complex there where they're renting. Mm. And Newmarket, and the guy who posted this actually said, I live here so I can criticise it. It's not the safest area in the world. $4,500 a month for a 3-bed, 2-bath apartment. So based on the normal calculation as to affordability, you'd need to be earning $345,000 a year to afford that in Newmarket in Dublin 8. Mm. A 2-bed, 2-bathroom, $3,300, you'd need to be earning $245,000 a year. Do you know, this kind of allowing people to build for rent, in other words, putting endless money in the pockets of developers, when in fact what we're looking for are permanent homes for people, not homes that will get more and more expensive and become less and less affordable.
This is why we're focusing on, I suppose, the cost, you might say the cost rental side of the house, which is 25% below market. But, you know, it is, from our perspective, it's a large commitment in terms of
not force them under the planning to build apartments for sale and not for endless rent? And I understand why pension funds want these kind of assets.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the revenue keeps coming in year on year, and it gets bigger as inflation...
Over the last number of years, Pat, there's been a presumption against the build-to-rent sector, which hasn't done us any favour in terms of our delivery, because funding apartments is complex. And it tends to be long-term money as opposed to short-term. Back in the day, when apartments were going up in the early noughties, they were all built to sell, and it was a quick turn. Whereas when you factor in the cost of finance and all the bits and pieces, it is expensive to borrow the money. So you've got the cost of finance, which is probably adding about 20% in terms of what it's costing a developer or a pension fund or whatever else.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, all these complexes that are being built only to rent, I mean, it's a time bomb, because, you know, people who live in them then retire, have pensions instead of incomes, can't afford them anymore. And then they'll be looking to people like yourselves or indeed charities for accommodation.
So, I mean,
it's a time bomb.
I don't know if it's a time bomb, Pat. It's not an optimum position to be in. But all we can do in terms of the public sector is try to deliver more social and affordable units.
But you are the planning authority as well.
We are the planning authority, but I don't believe I can turn around and sort of say, well, no, you can't do this. But we do take our 10 to 20% social and affordable out of those built-to-rents.
Yeah, and sometimes they're not affordable at all. Isn't that the problem, that by the time you
By the time we acquire them, okay, and then we put them out, we might spend $500,000 on acquiring it under Part 5 legislation, but we'll then rent it out for 15 to 18% it is now of the net disposable income of the primary earner.
Now, the final area I want to look at briefly with you is I maintain that Dublin City is, and it's not just your council, because it spreads into the other council areas, that it's broken in terms of traffic movements. And you can blame the private car, but Dublin City is an obstacle course.
Well, I suppose
it's an obstacle. It really is. Well,
I mean, it is challenging, Pat. I don't deny it. It is challenging, but what you've got to look at is, it is, you might say, the primary centre, and the public transport piece is critical. We need to try to move people around. We operate a traffic control system which tries to move traffic around as quick as we possibly can.
We're one of the slowest cities now in Europe.
Well, we are, but I mean, because there's an over-reliance on the private motor car coming in and out of town, and that's why Metrolink will be important, the Dart West
2035.
Plus. Yeah, and I mean, over the next over the next number of years, Pat, I mean, I have a special unit in place because of the impact of everything from the ESBs powering up, which will be digging up the streets. We have, you know, the active travel program. We have Metrolink. We have Dart Plus, Dart Southwest. You know, there's the 12 quality or bus connects corridors. So there's a lot going to be impacting. But you look at the upstream benefits of a more livable city. Everybody waxes lyrical about Mayor Hidalgo's 15-minute city. But it that causes pain, Pat, for some people.
Most of the people you're promising the living city to, by the time you deliver it, they'll be dead.
Hopefully not, Pat.
I'm serious. I mean, by the time all of this stuff is done,
but, I mean,
you're
Pat,
looking at decades.
In fairness, Pat, if I had the magic wand, yes, you can deliver things very quickly. Delivering any major scheme is challenging in this country.
The Chinese do it quicker. We've got to remove the obstacles, do we not?
Well, Pat, if I would rather be living in Ireland than living in China.
On that note, I must invite you once again a few weeks' time, months' time maybe, to resume our conversation.
No problem at all, Pat.
Always very good. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
That's Richard Shakespeare,
take care.
CEO of DCC.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.